Next on BYUSN, we're going back to the 80s for another BYU football eras special, specifically the years of 1980 to 1983. We highlight the top plays, standout players, and best moments from the early part of an unforgettable decade.
You'll hear from legendary BYU quarterbacks Jim McMahon and Steve Young as they recount their favorite moments from those seasons.
Yeah, the quarterback factory was up and running at a very high level. BYU football back to the 80s starts now. Let's go.
Proud to bring you great moments in Cougar sports history.
Here's Jim McMahon.
See Steve Young there.
He's chased out of the pocket. Goes way deep. Has a man there.
He is a great leader. Just a tremendous leader. He's respected by the team.
He scores.
Quarterback draw right up the middle. He might make it. He does.
McMahon. He picks up 20 quick yards.
Throws it back to Young. Young catches the ball.
Throwing for the end zone. Receivers are there. Defenders are there.
That's how we start. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, back to the 80s, part one, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan, and we're back at it, remembering another crazy, wild, super fun era in BYU football.
The 70s show was awesome. Now we're in the 80s, and there's so much content. We had to do a part one. There's so much goodness and amazing football from BYU. We had to do part one and two. I do think we should have wore, like, 80s wigs, though, or like vests or something. You know, the attire is not quite 80s, but this is going to be a lot of fun, man.
Well, we need to just up the budget in our costume department, right?
Yes. Also, we were born in this decade.
Let's begin chronologically with a magical 1980 season, the first 12-win team in BYU football history. The Cougars won those 12 straight games consecutively after losing at New Mexico in week one. Not many people remember that. They lost in week one and then didn't lose the rest of the season. BYU won a fifth straight WAC championship, of course, beat SMU to get BYU's first ever bowl game win in a Holiday Bowl miracle. Jim McMahon finished fifth in the Heisman Trophy voting, and the Cougars were launching into a new era. It took a 50-yard launch pass to get there, but now BYU was a bowl winner.
There's no way you could go from Gary Shadi, a little bit of space, Gifford Nielsen, Mark Wilson, to another guy, right? You now have the next great quarterback in BYU history, one who I'm a huge fan of. We are here. Jim McMahon's 80 was so good. First 4,000-yard passer in NCAA history, 4,571 yards. Doesn't include the bowl game, by the way, where he threw for a mile on the last play. 64% nearly completion rate, 47 touchdowns, 8 picks. The quarterback rating, 176.9. NCAA records in many of these. It was the greatest quarterback season by any player ever up to that point.
Listen, I know 18 interceptions seems like a lot, but if it's countered by 47 touchdown passes, you taking that?
You're plus 29 touchdowns?
All day, every day.
Incredible.
McMahon left BYU holding 70 NCAA records.
Wow.
And his name is still in the current record book 10 times, by the way. Those career stats, just under 10,000 yards, 9,536 passing yards, 62% completion percentage, 84 touchdown passes, Jerem, in a wildly prolific career.
84, you say. That's a fun number right
now. 84. Here. How about that?
I like that. The WAC dynasty continues for BYU. They're now winning the league. They've done it five straight years now. Third outright title. They had at least a share from 76 to 85. BYU had won twice in 42 and then 65. They just didn't really win the WAC that much. Now they're winning it every year and going to the Holiday Bowl.
BYU football fans were straight up spoiled. Spoiled in this era. This run from 76 to 85 is just, it's remarkable.
Oh, by the way, the fall of 80 and then the spring of 81. That's Danny Ainge and the boys going to the Elite Eight. That and men's golf winning the national title.
BYU sports fans in general.
It's a pretty good year.
Amazing.
Maybe the best in BYU sports history ever.
Okay, back to 1980. We've already referenced the Holiday Bowl win for the Cougars, and it took a miracle. So
literally,
it's aptly named the Miracle Bowl. BYU trailed the game 45-25 with under 4 minutes to play in the fourth quarter. They faced fourth and hopeless, Jerem. Punt team's going on. Jim McMahon says,
He
says in a very calm way, I think we should go for it, guys.
Mr. Sir, can we please not punt? Something like that.
We say that in jest because there was a heated conversation. Offense stayed on the field once Lavelle Edwards thought, well, we got nothing to lose. Like, let's just go for it.
Yeah.
And that started the most remarkable comeback in college football bowl game history.
My grandma had a glass of the Miracle Bowl that had, like, all the stats on it and everything. Growing up, I was always like, this is the most special glass ever. I will consume the orange juice in said glass. I love that glass because for some reason it was the Miracle Bowl. It had all the details. 41 yards to Clay Brown. Touchdown. Somehow Cosmo's like in the pile on this, which is my favorite part of this. How does nobody come down with this but Clay Brown? We probably think there's some divine intervention in this. Wait for Cosmo to come in. There he is. What a chuck from McMahon. This is not the first and only Hail Mary in BYU history. Later at Nebraska becomes another one. What a moment for BYU football to win their first bowl game in that manner. There are many people who went to the game and then left because BYU was getting blown
out. Can you blame them?
Avoiding traffic at old Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego. What a moment for BYU football.
Let's give Kurt Gunther his due as well for kicking the game-winning extra point to make it 46-45.
What did Lavelle Edwards say? He said, we had Jim McMahon, a Catholic, throwing to Clay Brown, a Protestant, but it was a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that kicked the extra point.
Uh-huh.
He would like to joke at banquets about the religious affiliation.
And Bill Shefflin, another Catholic man, blocked the punt.
Hey,
right?
We need everybody to do this. Is that what we learned on that sequence?
It took a straight-up miracle of events for this to happen.
Still good, man. And the QB factory. Here we go, like we were talking about. Gary Scheide, 73-74. Gifford Nielsen, after that, 75-77. Mark Wilson, remember, he is a top five Heisman guy and a first-round pick. So surely you can't top that, right? Jim McMahon is going to top this. He stands on Gary and Gifford and Mark's shoulders and continues it. Steve will continue that later. And then Robbie Bosco wins a national championship. Ty Detmer, Steve Sarkisian. It keeps going. It's an unbelievable run here. And Jim is fourth in line. And that's if you don't include Virgil Carter from the mid-60s. You're talking about Lavelle's dudes. Incredible run of quarterbacks.
BYU's greatest team up to that point, speaking of the 1980 squad, they finished number 12 in the final AP poll after beating SMU in that heart-stopping finish. And this was on the heels of BYU finishing number 13 the year before, when BYU was upset by Indiana in that same Holiday Bowl game to close out the decade of the 70s.
Okay, on to 81 we go. 80 was pretty good. 81 is good, too. Perhaps a little underrated. I don't know that we talk about 81 a ton around here. First-ranked team in BYU history in the preseason poll, 16. Finished 11-2, number 13 in the AP poll. Second straight Holiday Bowl win. Oh, now BYU's winning bowl games. Let's go. Beat Washington State, 38-36, pick six by Tom Homel. McMahon finished third in the Heisman voting that year. He was fifth in 80. So an even better Heisman voting season for McMahon, who completes his college career as perhaps up to that point, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, college quarterback statistically in NCAA history. He was so good.
How ridiculous is it that we say, oh, 11-2, a little bit of a step back.
I don't know, like, what happened?
A little bit of a step back for the Cougars to go 11-2 and win a bowl game.
I'd take it now, this year. 13th in the AP poll finish.
Great season, but yes, technically speaking, not quite as decorated as the previous two. Those teams only with one loss apiece in 79 and 80.
Okay, all the quarterbacks, but this is tight end you as well. Gordon Hudson, incredible seasons. Clay Brown right before that, who catches the Hail Mary, awesome. Clay Brown is tremendous, an All-American in 1980. And then Gordon Hudson in 82 and 83, he's consensus All-American. Consensus means all the voters that vote are like, that's the best tight end in football. At the time, by the way, Gordon Hudson held the NCAA record for most career receiving yards by a tight end with 2,484. Later, my boy Dennis Pitta would take over that moniker and still has it, I believe, to this day.
That guy.
And so Clay Brown and now Gordon Hudson, and prior to that, you had Brian Billick. Todd Christensen is going to go to the NFL after being a fullback and be a great tight end. It continues. Great tight ends at BYU.
Not surprisingly, to have a great college football team, you need a lot of professional football talent. And all of those guys had their due.
Yep.
in the professional ranks. Let's move on to the 1982 season. Out goes Jim McMahon, and surely there's not another
great
quarterback.
There's no way they have another good one.
There's got to be some type of respite here. No. In comes Steve Young. That said, BYU goes 8-4. They win the WAC championship still.
7-1.
Seventh straight WAC title. They go 7-1 in league play. As you referenced, Jerem, 10 different players are all WAC honored. Gordon Hudson sets the NCAA touchdown receptions record, but they get beat up by Ohio State in the Holiday Bowl. They had three regular season losses by a combined 7 points.
They were close, man.
So maybe because BYU doesn't have that signature win, they didn't win at Georgia. They were close.
Oh, man, they were close.
Probably should have won that game.
Yep.
Didn't beat Ohio State, got beat up by the Buckeyes in the Holiday Bowl. That kind of feels like why 82 is like, it was okay. But they still won the WAC title.
Motivated into 83. It didn't resonate after three straight 11-plus wins. And, by the way, the previous 3 years going 34-4. So they equaled the loss total of the previous three. But it really set up a special 83.
No question. Steve Young's senior campaign, if you will, in 1983, becomes one that is, I believe, launching BYU's best football team ever into new territory, where the Cougars finish in the top 10 for the first time in history. They're 11-1 that season, Jerem.
It was amazing. It was incredible. It's one of the best seasons BYU's ever had. And Steve in 82, still pretty good, by the way. You look at some of his numbers, 18 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, 10 rushing touchdowns. But then you go into 83, 11-1, lost the first game of the season by one score at Baylor. But they win all the rest of the games. They win at UCLA and Air Force, who both finish in the top 25. They beat Missouri in the Holiday Bowl dramatically. Steve Young and Gordon Hudson, first team All-Americans. And this is one of the greatest BYU football teams ever. Their resume is up there with anybody's. 84 argues, hey, we won the Natty. Root beer.
Yeah.
Get off this hill. I'm going to die on it. But 83 is right there if they're not the best.
83 sets up 84 to do what they did. Because 83 finishes number 7. BYU is unranked going into 1984.
So yes and no.
But
did it set them up? They were unranked.
But still, like, BYU was on the mind. And we can go all the way back to the late 70s. Like, BYU had been so good for so many years in a row that when they beat Pittsburgh that first game of the season, they were immediately ranked. I was like, oh, they're back again.
Pitt's number 3. The reason you're unranked to start is because you lose Todd Shelf, first-round NFL linebacker.
Steve Young
and Gordon Hudson to the USFL, who later, obviously, are first-rounders in the NFL. Later after that, BYU lost a lot of talent coming out of that. But you start the season with the win over number 3, even though Pitt stunk that year, 3-7-1. It wasn't BYU's fault they were 3-7-1.
No.
BYU just goes and wins the game. Let's go.
No other team in BYU football history has multiple road wins over teams that finished in the top 20. That 83 team stands alone in that category when they beat UCLA and Air Force on the road, back-to-back, Jerem. So, I mean, just the quality of the resume, and it makes you wonder, and Steve Young, like, is pained about this. Like, if you throw out the Baylor loss, what would BYU have been a legitimate national title contender as an undefeated team? Because with one loss, having won 11,
absolutely,
they finished number 7. If you take that away, now they're in the conversation again.
But would the ball bounce their way like you did
maybe
in 84?
Not.
Like, BYU got some really nice other losses that paved the way. Otherwise, BYU finishes like number 3, and we're having this argument.
BYU needed to have some gifts, and
yes,
they got them late in the season in terms of these monumental upsets.
Yes, yes.
In 84.
And we're going to talk to Steve about this coming up. But what a season for BYU. It starts a 25-game win streak. 25! From the beginning of 83 to a couple of weeks into 85. BYU doesn't lose, man.
And when you think about 25 games, like, Who does that? Like, nobody
That's
was doing that.
That's hard for Georgia to do.
No, nobody was doing that.
Alabama.
BYU gets to the Holiday Bowl, but they need some more dramatics. Another last-second, heart-stopping finish against Missouri this time, and it's the old throwback that was buried deep in the playbook, Jerem.
Well, they had run it against New Mexico earlier in the year, so they pulled it back out. Eddie Stinnett nearly intercepted. Steve Young catches it by the nose of the ball and then gets in. He had a receiving, rushing, and passing touchdown in this game.
Amazing. BYU wins 21-17 when the play call goes in. Eddie Stinnett says, no, we're not running it. We are not running that play. And Steve Young says, we got to do it. We got to do it. Eddie's so nervous that, like, he takes, like, two steps, doesn't sell it all, and just, like, chucks it back. It's going to get picked off, but somehow it ends up in the hands of Steve Young.
That's an amazing play.
BYU wins the 1983 Holiday Bowl.
It almost feels like a dumb play call at that point of the game, but it totally worked,
which
is crazy.
Yeah, well, LaBelle Edwards said, it's probably a good thing I didn't know that that play was called, or I would have lost my
mind.
Can
you imagine now if that was wrong in that situation? That's crazy.
He had a fantastic season as a quarterback. Speaking of Steve Young, his 83 stats include 3,902 passing yards. He completed 71% of his passes.
This is the era where like 50% was good, by the way.
He went from 18 touchdowns and 18 interceptions the previous year to 33 touchdown passes, only 10 picks in 83. So drastic difference right there. His passing efficiency was really good, 168.5. 8 rushing touchdowns as well for Steve, and finished second in the Heisman voting.
Once Steve started throwing actually left-handed, I thought he was much better than 82 when he threw right-handed. Yeah, well. I'm just kidding. BYU finished the 83 season number 7 in the AP poll. And now BYU's cooking, right? 77, finished 20th. 79th, 13th, the first great team in BYU history. 80, 12th. 81, 13th. 83, 7th.
Building.
Can you see where we're going here?
They are
here?
Building to 84.
This is like Boise State later kind of did this, right? BYU was the OG kind of outsider doing this, though. And BYU culminates in an 84 national title.
Yeah, because of that national championship, college football and the landscape of the NCAA changed a bunch of different things so that it would make it basically impossible for a team like BYU to win like the Cougars did in 1984.
Yeah. Good job, Brigham.
The whole
set in the apple cart.
BYU upset the system, and it's fantastic. Okay, up next, we'll play back part of our interview with Jim McMahon from a few years ago as he remembers some of his favorite moments and that Miracle Bowl specifically that the Cougars pulled off in 1980. Don't go anywhere. This is BYU Sports Nation, back to the 80s.
BYU with McMahon at quarterback. Has a man there, it'll be a touchdown.
Jim McMahon, what a sensational career.
McMahon to throw, does throw. Great pass from McMahon to Hudson, and Hudson made a great catch.
Live in Studio B for yet another BYU Sports Nation special. This is BYU Football, back to the 80s, part one. I'm Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan.
Is that Johnny Harleen on guitar, by the way? Just shredding?
It could be.
He can shred, bro.
Probably not, but he can shred. We had the opportunity and privilege to host the great Jim McMahon in Studio B a few years ago, and we're going to play back part of that interview because we want you to hear again some of his favorite memories of playing at BYU and playing at the time in Cougar Stadium and what it meant to have his jersey retired in LaBelle Edwards Stadium.
All the records that you broke and everything that you accomplished, what means the most to you? That you accomplished at BYU? What's the feat that you accomplished at BYU that means the most to you?
Winning the first bowl game for Coach Edwards, first and second. That was, they'd been, I don't know how many bowl games before that. We'd been to a couple of Holiday Bowls before that, didn't get it done. So winning that first one, that was something I'll always remember.
And the iconic, of course, it kind of starts with you guys are going to punt, and you, in no uncertain terms, come over to the sideline and say, we are not punting, in friendly BYU TV verse there. What do you remember from that sequence of the competitor, perhaps the most competitive moment for you comes out where it's like, no, I refuse to give up right here?
Well, like I said, we hadn't won a bowl game yet. And why, had we punted then, the game is over.
Why not?
Why not? I'm not going to go out laying down like that, And so, like you said, I came and LaBelle and I had a little quaint discussion. and he let me go back in the game because I didn't want to come off the field. The guy, I said huddle up on fourth down and we had to burn one of our timeouts that we would have needed later. But, it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, you got the first down. A couple plays later, you get a touchdown, get the ball back quickly, score another touchdown. When Bill Shepley blocks that punt, what's going through your mind?
Well, I think there was about 18 seconds left when he did that. And so I knew we had at least three plays in us, time for three plays. I just said, you know, we got back in the huddle. I said, look, we come too far now. Let's win this game, you know. And I remember, I think it was the first pass that I threw that was, it was to Clay Brown across the middle. And it was probably the worst pass I'd thrown all year long. And the cornerback on the offside had let his man go and was about, if I'd have led Clay with the ball, it probably would have been picked off, game over. But I threw a terrible pass behind him, and he didn't catch the one with the one hand like he did in the first half. He let it go. The next one, I think I threw out of bounds down the sidelines, and then, you know, the 3 seconds left, you know, you got one play. And it's a play we practice every week, you know, you just hope you never have to use it. And it worked out to perfection. I mean, first guy down is supposed to tip it if he can't catch it. And the ball came right down to Clay. I mean, it was just like there was three or four SMU guys around him, and not one of those guys touched the ball. And I ended up playing with two of those defensive backs from SMU. Wes Hopkins was one. He was a safety. I played with him in Philadelphia. And Reggie Phillips was the other DB. Played with him in Chicago. And that conversation came up a lot. Yeah, I said, hey, how did you guys miss the ball? I mean, it was three of you guys there. None of you touched it but Clay. It was just one of those things. I mean, it was somebody was looking out for us, that's for sure.
It's a sore spot for Eric Dickerson, too.
Oh, Eric and I'll probably see him up in Tahoe in a few weeks, and we'll, you guys stole that game. That's all I ever hear from those guys.
There's a moment, and I think you've told it, but I'd love to hear from you, with Vaisa Kahema, where you recreate this moment in a practice in the NFL or something? Do you recall this?
Briefly. We were all in Philadelphia together. And
one of the DBs from SMU is talking trash.
Wes was one of the DBs.
Yep.
And so I think we reenacted it. I can't remember
the
what happened.
The Vi pulled his pants down or something and caught the Vi or something. Yeah.
That sounds like Vi.
Elder Sika.
He's a big wig now.
He's big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim McMahon on BYU Sports Nation. Now, as you mentioned, it's a special occasion to have you back in Provo. For you, what's it like now to know that when you walk into Lavelle Edwards Stadium, your name's up there, it's retired, the number 9 is there. What does that mean to you?
Well, I had some great years here. I had a lot of fun with my teammates and coaches, and we had a lot of success. And to see my name finally up there is, I didn't think it'd ever happen because I didn't think I'd ever graduate, but I finally, you know, took those last 5 classes and got it done, I think 6-7 years ago, something like that.
Yep.
It was a big burden off my shoulders, and you know, I had promised Lavelle and my folks that I'd get it done, and I was glad to do it before, you know, we ended up losing them. So it's nice to be up there.
Where'd you get that suit you wore at graduation that year? That was the most outlandish, amazing suit.
Jacket.
Of, yes, the jacket, yeah.
Just a jacket from a company that just sends me stuff.
I need to get my hands on that thing. That was incredible, man.
Yeah, I like color.
Yeah. You know? I've never
Black
asked you.
Black and white's not real, you know.
Yeah.
It's too bland for me.
Yeah. We've never asked you about this, but in 2014, in the game where at halftime you are, honored, Taysom Hill breaks his leg in the first half, and there's kind of this weird vibe in the stadium, but we were all so excited to have you there. What was that like for you? Because obviously it's this huge moment for you. But it was also a weird vibe in the stadium because Taysom gets hurt right there.
And I think we ended up losing that night, too. Uh-huh. I think it was to Utah State, if I'm correct.
You were the one win that night.
And I think the last time they had lost to Utah State was when I was playing here. So it was kind of a bittersweet night. but it brought back some memories. But, it was nice. It was a nice night.
Yeah.
They did a great job.
Yeah.
Now, Jeremy and I were talking this morning about everything that you did at such a high level at BYU. Including at one point punting the ball.
So some people forget this.
Yeah, were you an underrated punter?
My average wasn't all that good. I think it was like 39 yards or something. But you know, we didn't really have to punt a whole lot back then. You know, my freshman year, we had Gifford Nielsen, you know, All-American QB, and Mark Wilson was after him. So you know, we didn't punt a whole lot. I probably maybe 20 times. I don't even remember my stats. But I was just happy to make the varsity. You know, in some capacity. And so, you know, Gifford got hurt, I think, the 4th game of that year, so all of a sudden I'm the backup. But I'm, again, I was still punting, and I got in a couple games my freshman year, but nothing spectacular.
Didn't you punt left-footed one time? Did that happen?
That happened over in Hawaii, yeah. Yeah, it was a game I wasn't supposed to play, and I kept saying, my arm was hurting, which it was. I ended up throwing like 60-some balls that night, even though I wasn't supposed to play. But, yeah, the center hiked it over my head, and when I chased it down, I happened to just turn to my left, or to my right, actually. So I'm running towards our sideline, and the guy chasing me, if I would try to kick it, you can't stop and kick it. The guy would block the punt, so I just kept running. And, you know, I'd kick a few things around with my left feet before, so... To me, it wasn't that big a deal. I was just trying to get, you know, just get it anywhere that way, yeah. Right? And it ended up down on the 1 yard line. That's a pretty good punt. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite. Yeah, I hadn't heard it from you, but I'd heard this, the Jim McMahon left footed punt story, which is awesome. Why was your arm hurting? Just too much frisbee on the beach the day before?
No, it was, I've had shoulder problems ever since high school. I had it dislocated originally in high school, and just over the years, all the throwing and you know, using your arm, it just wore it down and wore it down. And eventually, you know, in the pros, it finally got it fixed. But I played quite a few years with a bad shoulder.
Did you play 80 and 81 with a bad shoulder then? You just muscled through it?
Yeah, it's been bad for a long time. Mm.
You broke all those NCAA records with a bad shoulder.
Well, I mean, I didn't feel a whole lot. You know, amazing what painkillers do. That and adrenaline, you know. You get out there on game day, just you forget a lot of pain. So I didn't think about it once I was out there.
Are you saying with two good eyes and two good shoulders, you could have broken even more records?
Been okay.
Yeah. You might have been all right. Yeah. Ty couldn't have reached some of those records. Yeah.
Well, I think Ty broke them all anyway.
Yeah.
Great. Jim McMahon as part of our Back to the 80s special. Talked with his former teammate and BYU's athletic director, Tom Holmo, and he'll quickly tell you he's one of the most fiery, competitive dudes that he's ever met, and recounting playing through those injuries only adds to that conversation.
Just a low-key, non-competitive guy, said no one. So fun to have him in studio and chat with him for a few minutes. Good recall there. I know he's battled a lot of things right from some of his injuries, but the punter thing was fun to chat with him about, because people forget, as a freshman in 77, he punted 55 times exactly for 39.3 yards, as he mentioned. Underrated athlete. He's playing in Roy, comes to BYU, and to me, he's the greatest quarterback in BYU history. I have him one, and then I have Ty two and Steve three, and anyone who argues any order of those three, I'm cool with it. I just personally think that Jim is number one. What he did, when he did, still lasts and still looks good. At the time, broke 70 NCAA records. Incredible.
Yeah, wild that, and maybe because it was so new and so off the radar in the passing game still. Like, if he had done this in 1990, he would have won the Heisman Trophy like Ty Detmer did.
Yeah.
Like if Jim McMahon were planted a decade later, these numbers and what he did, you know, it would have won him the Heisman Trophy.
BYU QBs are not doing what he did in 1980 still to this day.
Why?
I mean, 4,000 yards, first guy to do it. All those touchdowns, bowl games didn't even count in the stats. Now they do. I mean, Jim's amazing. And he was awesome. Won a Super Bowl, too. Big time.
All right. He still holds at least 10 records that we know of as well. So he's got that going for him, which we touched on earlier in the show. After the break, we'll take a closer look at where Jim McMahon and Steve Young finished, specifically in the Heisman races from 1980 to 1983. This is BYU Sports Nation, Back to the 80s.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation's Back to the 80s, focusing on BYU football. And look at this. In his two seasons as a full-time starter, Jim McMahon finished fifth in the Heisman voting in 1980, third in 1981.
That's pretty good. I heard that's pretty good. Is that good? Would we take that now?
My notes have that as excellent.
Okay, after an up-and-down year in 82, Steve Young had one of the most prolific seasons in BYU history in 83, finished second in the Heisman, the highest in program history to that point, and still second best, only topped by Ty Detmer in 1990. That 83 season is just ridiculous. And Steve would go on to a pretty good NFL career.
I want you all to think about what I'm going to say next, because it's maybe the wildest, most underappreciated stat on the show today. And that is BYU had a player in the top five of Heisman voting in six of the seven seasons between 1979 to 1985.
That's ridiculous. I don't think it'll be topped in BYU history. Alabama's quarterbacks had a nice run. Oklahoma's quarterbacks as well. But you look at this. This is why it's QBU. Like, this stat right here.
This is why you're on Sports Illustrated with the Quarterback Factory.
It's pretty awesome.
That right there. After the break, Pro Football Hall of Famer, two-time NFL MVP and Super Bowl champion, Steve Young, Cougar legend, on BYU Sports Nation, back to the 80s.
Steve Young. He's scrambling. Completes it to the 10. The quarterback run. Steve Young got in for the score. Pass right where you expect it. He'll just pick you apart.
Catches the ball. They might. They do score. BYU did it.
BYU football back to the 80s. Love this era's conversation that we've been having. And why not welcome in the legend and NFL MVP, two-time Super Bowl champion, the great Steve Young, is with us on this BYUSN special. Steve, how are you today?
Now you guys are trying to pump me up. Usually I come on here and you try to rip me to pieces. So this is going to be fun. Let's see how great you can make me look. That's awesome. Okay.
This is your home, Steve. But with that said, we do want to talk about 1982, which is really funny because people act like this is just this glossed over year. You guys still were 7-1 and WAC champs, but it felt like 82 is this sort of afterthought. What was it like going into that season being like, all right, the great Jim McMahon's done. This left-handed guy who was the 8th-string quarterback is going to be our quarterback now. You guys win the WAC. You still had a good year.
Yeah, and I remember that moment and felt like, you know, because everything was around winning the WAC and going to the Holiday Bowl. And that was kind of, that's how you judged yourself. And then, you know, try to go win the Heisman. That was what Jim, I guess it started back with, you know, it goes way back. But Jim McMahon, when I joined in 80, the 80 team was nutty. Like they were beating people 70-2, you know. I mean, like, and Jim was throwing the ball thousands and thousands of yards, and the rest of the college football is still running the split T or the veer or the, you know, we were so far ahead of everybody else, and we were just abusing the system because we were so far ahead of it. And it felt very familiar when I got to the 49ers with the West Coast offense and what they were doing in abusing the league because they were so far ahead as well. So there's real resonance between what we were doing in the late 70s and 80s and maybe somehow how it informed Bill Walsh. I never asked Bill that. Bill really helped when he brought Mike Holmgren back from BYU. I know, you know, Mike had a lot to say about that. And I think Bill probably took some things from what BYU was doing to inform. But those were two experiences that felt very familiar because we were, you know, you had to be there when they'd warm up and this know they were doing, and look, talent wise, you know, when we came out of the locker room, it wasn't like everyone goes, oh my gosh, watch out for Matt Braga. He's gonna get you, you know. there wasn't anything that, and I'm not picking on Matt, but I'm just saying that, you know, but we just, so the execution and the innovation and the explosiveness. And the other thing about Jim McMahon, because if we're going to talk about the 80s, he's the start of it. He technically was the most sound quarterback that I ever been around and maybe ever was. I mean, Joe was obviously very technically sound, and how they played the position and how they read the defense and how they deliver the football. I mean, he was for all of his craziness, he was technically right down the middle, man. He was amazing. And he was throwing the ball. And I don't know there was anyone that threw the ball like he did as early as he did in the pros or college. You know, in the pros, they weren't throwing. There's no way they were throwing the ball. Joe was doing it a few years later in 84 in the Super Bowl and against Miami. But by 80, I don't know if there's anybody. I mean, maybe you can say Dan Fouts a little bit, right? And the Air Coryell. But, you know, in college, nobody. You know, you could maybe say that Stanford was doing with John, but there was no one like this. And so that's why I want to, when you talk about the 80s, you got to set the context. Is that BYU is doing something that was revolutionary in many ways and was just pounding people because of it. And it was super fun to be around. Every game was just every game was amazing. But hey, you go back to 82, sorry, 80, you want to talk about 82. Yeah, it was a good year. We won the WAC, but we didn't win the Super Bowl. We didn't win the Holiday Bowl. And Ohio State came in and freaking smashed us. And smashed me, man. It was brutal. And that's what we, that's who we were, though. Throughout that time, you know, the a huge national powerhouse with the size and athletic ability and the speed could beat us. But they beat us with just pure velocity. Like, it just ran us over. And it was a lesson for the future, so that we could, you know, kind of amend what we had done before. And SMU did the same thing. SMU ran us over in 80, but then the last 4 or 5 minutes was insanity. We know that story.
Steve Young is with us on BYU Sports Nation. This is BYU football back to the 80s. I want to stay with one more 1982 question, specifically about the renovation and the expansion of Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Cougar football fans saw this greatness building from the 70s and through Jim McMahon, and now you're the starting quarterback. What do you remember about playing in front of that expanded Lavelle Edwards Stadium for the first time?
That was fun because it was, it felt like a true 360 stadium. Like, it could fit, you know, people that, it felt like it really mattered. I mean, when you have two sides and you don't have any in the end, that was, I think Wyoming had that. There was other teams of New Mexico had that. It was like, it just felt like more high school, and the expansion made us feel like, you know, kind of major league. And that was important. I think that, sometimes the facilities matter, coaches matter, you know, offensive style, like, it all matters. And so when we built out the stadium, it felt like we could, you know, when we brought people into town, every once in a while Texas A&M would show up, or every once in a while someone else, it was like, no, we can think of ourselves as more big time now. I, you know, now looking back, I wish we would have done an even bigger job, right? I mean, I wish we would have kind of been more aspirational about it, because I think it would be fun if it was bigger today, but hey, we'll take it.
Okay, at Georgia in 1982, this is a game that BYU nearly pulls off, 17-14. Tom Homo had a pick six in that game. That was a big moment. Freshman Herschel Walker, junior Steve Young. This is a big game. How close was BYU to winning that game, which would have been the biggest win in program history at the time?
We had the game. It was done. It was fourth. I remember Herschel and the quarterback was Buck Ballou. And it was pouring rain the whole day. And I have my own terrible story about that game with Lavelle and my 5 or 6 interceptions. It was a disaster. But we were still in it. And we actually had the lead late. And I want to say it was fourth and maybe a yard for the Georgia going in for the winning score. And the ball literally gets snapped and spits through Buck Ballou's hands straight in the air, right? It's fourth and one. The ball's straight in the air, and everyone's waiting for it to come down, and it comes down to this big pile of people. And I'll never forget, the head referee comes out of the pile. Herschel Walker has the ball, and they spot it, you know, half a yard. Like, they gained a yard and a half by snapping the ball straight up in the air. First down, Georgia. And I just remember, like, oh my gosh, I'll never let that, you know, even when I say that, I get my throat in my mouth, because, you know, like, first down, Georgia. Like, you know, gain a yard and a half on a ball spinning up in the air between the, but that was the game. For all of my foibles and all the mess that it was and that pouring rain, that was the game. And if they, you know, if they don't gain that yard and a half from first down, Georgia, it was our game, which would have been super fun, because I never played worse, and it would have been so much fun to win a game that I played so terrible.
Certainly.
Like, that'd be, especially at Georgia, you know?
Now, through all the hard times that you've been discussing through 82 and some frustrations, it set up a magical 1983. What was different about 1983, and how did you build from some of those tough experiences in 82 that shaped the great season that 83 was?
I was better. I played 82 trying to replace Jim McMahon, trying to, you know, just fraught with terror, you know? And I remember when we played at Utah in 82 to win the WAC. And it starts snowing at the end of the game. And I remember walking off the field thinking, you know, at least I did that. You know, at least I'm there. Like I did, you know, and I didn't mean it was me individually. I get the fact that we're all a team game. You guys know it. I know that intuitively, but just the sense that how the perception is, and just there was a relief. And I think that was a building block to 83. 83 felt like it was my year. And that maybe I matured. Maybe I looked at it differently. Maybe I had a different perspective, but I know that it was felt way different to me. And it felt like something I could go author. And that's my own maturity. It's my immaturity in 82 that I think cost us. And I think my maturity in 83 really helped.
Steve, I've been a proponent that 83 needs to get more respect and like is right up there with the greatest team in BYU football history. And you look at what you did on the resume. I can't find another BYU team that finished the season with two road wins against teams that finished in the top 20. But you did that at UCLA and at Air Force. Certainly your maturity plays into that. But what did going through that and having that type of resume do for you as you pursued your own football career after, you know, pulling off an incredible season where you finished number 7 in the country?
Yeah, I think again, building off of 82 and the experience with Ohio State, and it's kind of like you have to see it to truly understand it. And when Ohio State came out, and Ohio State had a really good team, but had lost the game. Maybe Michigan beat them or something, and they were flaming about it, you know. And they came out, and so I think that the experience at the Holiday Bowl in 82 really informed all of us on what it really meant to be good or to be great. And certainly informed me a lot. And I think 83 was about that. It was like, look, we want to be great. We don't want to just be, you know, whack champions. We want to be great. And I think that's why the game at UCLA was the game that gave us the chance to prove it in the Rose Bowl. And I think that was the one that, you know, maybe led ways for in the future, because in the next few years we had to go play some big games. And I think off of what happened, there's an inspiration that came off of SMU. Like it was, you know, that, but everyone recognized that as kind of just crazy once in a lifetime. And then it really became what happened at UCLA. And I think UCLA was, especially being on the West Coast, especially in the Pac-12, at the time it was Pac-10 probably. And, you know, and just being in the Rose Bowl and all that stuff. So 83 really was defined by that game. And that game was defined by what happened the year before at Ohio State and how much we learned. And it was a difficult lesson, but we weren't going to be, and we were about that. I remember everyone on our team, everybody felt like we had all the talent in the world to go up against anybody. And that's why we're talking about national championship, you know, in 83, we're like, we're going to go win it. And obviously the thing at Baylor was something that you talk about throwing up in your mouth. I still, because being undefeated that season, we could have been national champions, right? But Baylor was the one that opening day down at Baylor, another lesson. But we were, by the end of the season, we were really good. And we've been built off. Sorry about that. Oh, my gosh. Look at that. The great Lee Johnson.
Of course Lee would be calling you.
Of course Lee interrupting.
Come on, man. You got to be kidding me. But I think that's the story of that. And 83... you know, put us up against anybody. I think all that 83 team would like put us up against anybody for sure.
Did you think you had a shot at winning the Heisman? You finished second, which was the greatest in BYU history up to that point, and then is still the second best finish ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, Mike Rozier at Nebraska, they just, every week, he was running for 250 yards every week. And not that we tried as a team to go win the Heisman together, you know, because, you know, you have to do something spectacular every week to do that. But we were good enough as a team to kind of just organically compete for that. And when I say the Heisman is won by a team, it really is. I mean, especially a quarterback. I mean, the quarterback's got to throw it around, but everyone's got to do all this great stuff to get it done. That's what makes football so great. And I think that everybody on the team felt like we could go win the Heisman. I remember when they announced Mike Rozier won the Heisman and I was second, and they gave him the trophy and they handed me a sweatsuit. And, big old thick cotton 1920 sweatsuit with a little tiny Heisman on it. I remember Second sucks, man.
Do you still have that?
I don't know. If I do, it's at the bottom of the pile. I can tell you that.
That is amazing. Steve Young is on BYU Sports Nation. We're going to cover 1983 in a separate, or sorry, 84, I should say, in a separate show. But when you beat Missouri and you win 11 straight games and you finish number 7, and it's just this remarkable send-off for you, at any point in your mind did you think, man, we've set up 84 to do something special? Like, did you fathom that 84 could potentially be in an even better scenario than you were in 83?
Well, it's hard to know because the quarterback transitions are always the thing that have defined BYU. When we've transitioned well, we've been really good. And when we haven't transitioned well, we're not very good. And so when Robbie took over, I didn't know anyone that thought that Robbie couldn't do it. But I mean, obviously going to look, anyone talking about a national championship at BYU had to be super aspirational. The fact that we were talking about it, but the fact that Jim talked about it, like, we were super aspirational about it. Think about the Heisman. You'd be super aspirational about the Heisman just because of, again, hearts and minds, right? It's like you have to win people over. And so the idea that we are talking about it, absolutely, that's how you get there. But actually pulling it off, actually getting it done, super cool.
So you show up at BYU in 1980. Is the 80-81 athletic year the greatest in BYU sports history? Because you have the 1980 football team, which only loses one game, and you top it off with the greatest comeback in NCAA history. In the spring in 81, Danny Ainge and Greg Kite and Fred Roberts go to the Elite Eight, and then the men's golf team wins the national championship. Can that year be topped? That was pretty good.
It was my freshman year, and Floyd Johnson was the equipment manager. He'd been there since Brigham Young, I think. And I went to him and said, look, I want to watch the basketball team. You know, what can I do to help you so I could go up and watch? He says, I need a visiting club manager to take the towels into the visiting locker room. And I said, that's me. So that whole basketball season, if you can go back and watch the video, I'm sitting at the end of the visiting bench with towels and handing them out to the visiting team, you know, and I watched Danny Ainge and Greg Kite and Scott Runya and Fred Roberts. I mean, my gosh, I was thrilled as a young kind of aspirational athlete to watch the greatness of that team and who they were. Obviously I watched all of what Jim had done. So yeah, how could you beat that? I don't know how we beat that year.
Steve, always great to talk with you. And certainly we knew we needed to have you on BYU football back to the 80s because you were such a prominent player with a ton of touchdown passes and a ton of wins in those years.
Yeah, and also don't forget, I was the color guy with Jim Nance.
Yes!
In 1984 for the national champ. I feel like I'm somewhat responsible for the 84 team because I kind of talked my way through it because I was in the USFL and the fall was off. And you know the old Jim Nance story where he got stuck in the elevator.
Yeah, crazy.
State. Yep.
That's wild. Well, we're glad that you were there to hold down the fort.
Colorado State, there's no announcer. It's just the game. Jim Nance and I are stuck in the elevator. The brand new expanded stadium, the elevator quit on us.
We're glad that we got that thing fixed. Good grief. Hey, Steve, again, thanks for your time. We know how busy you are.
And it's fun to go through memory lane. It's a lot of good times.
Absolutely.
And now it's time. Now look today. We got to recruit. Come on, Kalani, let's recruit. We got to get some people. Big 12, let's do this.
Let's go. Steve, thanks for the time, man.
All right, see you guys.
Our special, BYU Football Back to the 80s, continues in a BYUSN special right after this.
Oh, another interception.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
BYU Sports Nation Back to the 80s rolls on from Studio B. And while the show is ending, I know, bummer, I've got some great news. Part 2 is on its way.
We're going to ignore a couple years in the 80s, but 84 for the national championship, a young Ty Detmer emerges and has a great 89 that's kind of underrated. I can't wait to explore that. We've checked off the 70s, 80s part one, 80s part two coming up later.
Hop in the DeLorean, hashtag flux capacitor, because we're not done going back to the 80s just yet. For Jerem, I am Spencer. Shout out to Mike Holmgren. Go Cougs!